21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a lowly PhD, hanging out here somewhere in Owings Mills at this time. And, of course, our executive producer and research assistant is Laura Courtner. Our engineer is Jake Bryant. And thank you to Lesma. Well, the placement of the reverse of the Great Seal, that is, the pyramid and the eye and the triangle, on the back of the 1935 $1 bill, sparked a growing rage from Republicans in opposition to FDR, calling it satanic and of the devil. And for the past 74-plus years, this ignorance has been a source of unnecessary fear. Now, I followed this issue since 1966. And these fundamentalists have repeated these historical and factual errors using several sources that they just don't understand. For example, General Albert S. Pike, who authored Morals and Dogma, a book used in the 19th century revealing Freemasonic teachings, was filled with errors because he wrote it only 4 years after he became a Freemason and started his study on the upper levels without knowing its foundation. Now, Pike attempted to correct his early research, but to no avail, and fundamentalists quote it liberally. They also used the research of a dear friend of mine, Manly Palmer Hall, another 33rd degree Freemason, whose books on Freemasonry were also speculative and written before, they were written before he became a Freemason. Manly Palmer Hall made historical errors, which fundamentalists used to destroy the meaning and interpretation of the reverse of the Great Seal. Now, I corresponded with Manly for many years, confronting him on these now proven errors, which he failed to correct in his works, such as 50 of the 56 signers of America's Declaration of Independence were supposedly Freemasons. Now, Freemasonry would love to say most, if not all, of our founding fathers were Freemasons, but now they have admitted that only 9 of those signers were Freemasons. Well, that kind of speculation by Manly Palmer Hall led many to believe that those who designed America's Great Seal, especially its pyramid and the eye and the triangle, were Freemasons, which has proven again to be untrue. None of those who completed America's Great Seal, especially its reverse, were Freemasons. None. Now, if you build your foundation on speculation and lack of research, eventually you're going to be found out. Now, before I read any book, I review its sources of information, its references, and bibliography. Fundamentalists seldom, if ever, utilize primary sources, usually they quote each other's mistakes. And that is why what originated in 1935 created fear-driven speculation, not reason. And it continues unabated to this day. And why? Well, that's the reason why I got involved in this particular area. My research has been used by the State Department, the Department of Interior, and several White House administrations, having been invited to the White House over 4 or 5 times for that particular work, and has been utilized by national and worldwide media such as National Geographic, History, Discovery Channels, as well as Canadian, Russian, and German television, and why my books are now in German, Japanese, Russian, Spanish, French, etc., etc., etc. Now, for the past several months, we've been reviewing what I believe are some of the best recent books on America's symbols, all of which are outstanding. But inevitably, some repeat errors from the past, including my own early works from 1974 and 76. As I was completing our 2006 book, Founding Fathers Secret Society, I received an email from emails literally from every corner of the planet, making it impossible to respond to the vast majority of them. But there was one source, Arian Love of California, that reviewed her theory of the alchemical apotheosis of George Washington, and that was in, 2005. Now, nearly 5 years later, I received William Henry and Dr. Mark Gray's book, Freedom's Gate, The Lost Symbols in the United States Capitol, that accomplished what Arian Love only theorized. And one of the many accomplishments of William Henry and Dr. Mark Gray's Freedom's Gate, The Lost Symbols in the United States Capitol, is no other book on this subject utilizes its illustrations and photos to reveal its thesis in such great detail. The hundreds of illustrations are superb and are just one of the major sources of enjoyment in this groundbreaking research. For over 10 years, Nashville-based author William Henry has been writing and publishing books. He has written extensively on the arcane and the mysterious. Today, he is the host of the radio program Revelations and leader of tours to Egypt, Ireland, France, Washington, D.C., and Nashville. He lectures widely and appears frequently on Coast to Coast with George Norrie. Dr. Mark Gray is a chiropractor and symbolist who lives near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And with us this evening is William Henry. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio, William.
Thank you, Dr. Bob. It's a pleasure to talk with you again.
Same here. And what a gorgeous publication this is.
Thank you. And thank you for acknowledging Arian. I've known Arian, I first met him, must be 5-6 years ago now. I put out my presentation, National Treasure, that featured the apotheosis, and Arian got intrigued by it. He had some very interesting thoughts about the alchemical aspects of it, and so I'm really pleased that you are also in correspondence with him and picked up on that acknowledgement.
Well, the most important thing is that you carried that work so much further than anybody on this planet, and that's really important, and especially done in the way you did it. I think that speaks directly to the heart of this country. Now, Freedom's Gate, what is it? Is it the Capitol building or the apotheosis, or is it both?
It's actually, I think of it as both, because, of course, it's the goddess Freedom that stands atop the dome of the U.S. Capitol. And inside, when you're inside the dome of the rotunda, as I'm sure you know, and you're looking up into the apotheosis, you see this painting of George Washington enthroned on a rainbow, surrounded by angelic beings as well as five pagan deities. But all of this is encircled by a ring or a gate of 72 stars that, when I first looked at that, I said, that's a stargate. This is imagery indicating how we raise ourselves. This painting is loaded with cues and references to transformation and ascension, and ultimately how we achieve true freedom and liberty, which is through the process of an awakening or enlightening ourselves. So when it came time to naming the book, it just seemed that Freedom's Gate was the best title.
That's a perfect title. Tell us about the new underground Capitol Visitors Center and why it was needed.
Well, this is it was very controversial. We spent $650 million to build a new gateway to the Capitol. Why it was needed? Well, there's a big expansion program for Washington, D.C. There's about a 20- or 30-year plan for the city. They're going to get rid of a lot of the cars and auto traffic and other such things around the Capitol. return it to grassy areas for foot traffic. And so that's one part of the reason. It literally doubled the size of the Capitol itself. It's all underground. When you're there, you kind of get the sense that it serves a couple of purposes. One, it gives you a historical introduction to the Capitol. When you enter there, it also is a secure entrance to the Capitol. There's some wonderful exhibits there that take you through the beginnings of the country, and actually has exhibits that feature key documents from American history. But to me, I think one of the things that you have to go back to is the statement by Harry Reid, who was at that time the majority leader, when they opened the Capitol Visitor Center, and he said this with a preface saying that his staff told him not to say this, but it's the truth. But he's happy that the Capitol Visitor Center is now open because now they won't have to smell the tourists on hot summer days anymore.
Well, I guess there could be a better reason than that, but that's good enough. What features make the U.S. Capitol building a temple?
Well, I mean, let's start with the statements that it was co-conceived by Thomas Jefferson as a temple of sovereignty. There are poems from 1793 that describe it as the temple of celestial liberty. Even John Adams referred to it as a temple. And so you're thinking, well, okay, is it just words? Is this a metaphor? And when you start to look into the stone construction, the sacred geometry, the image of a deified being inside, which would be George Washington, angelic beings, a chapel, an underground entrance, terrifying guardians, and especially an alignment to the sun, you start to recognize that this is more than just words. They literally conceived and meant for the United States Capitol building to be a temple. And something that I like to point out is that another reason why they built it as a temple was because they viewed the Constitution itself as an oracle, as a divinely received manuscript or an oracle. And that the Capitol itself is an analog in stone to the words that are written into the Constitution, because it was believed that while it was Thornton who designed the original Capitol, the design was perhaps sent from heaven just as the Constitution was.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to thank you for quoting Henry James' words in The American, wherein he says that it is the Ark of the American Covenant. It is we the people. That's who it really is.
It's the people's house. That's right.
Yeah, it's the house of the people. In regards to Solomon's Temple, how is it linked to that symbolically?
Well, the Masons make that connection, of course, but the way I started to look at it was when they laid the cornerstone of the Capitol in 1793, they invoked the Grand Master Solomon. In fact, they dedicated it to the Grand Master Solomon. And then a short time later, President Adams comes along and refers to it as the Solemn Temple. And I just started adding their words together and asked the question, are they really saying that this is the Solomon's Temple? Is that what we're talking about here? And then when you bring in the Freemasonic concept that the lodge itself is a recreation of Solomon's Temple, what you're starting to develop a picture of is the United States Capitol as a Masonic lodge. But it goes even deeper than that, because the comparison is often made between the Vatican, mm-hmm, in its symbolic layout, and the United States Capitol in its layout. Both the Vatican and the U.S. Capitol have a dome, and both the Dome of the Capitol and the Dome of the Vatican both face an obelisk. So there's a very interesting correspondence there. But what I started to ponder and discussed in the book is that both the Vatican and the Vatican and the United States Capitol can be triangulated with Solomon's Temple in Jerusalem, especially the second temple that existed at the time of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. The curious thing that I found and point out in the book is that when you're in the Vatican, and when you're in specifically the Sistine Chapel, where the cardinals gather to elect the new pope, there's a very special place that the electees like to try to sleep, because when they're electing the Pope, they stay in the Sistine Chapel. It's turned into an apartment, and they don't leave there until they're successfully have elected the new Pope. Well, there's a painting in there that's called Christ Giving the Keys to St. Peter, and it is a painting by Perugino, who is a competitor of Michelangelo's, and it portrays Jesus giving the keys to St. Peter, thereby establishing the authority of the Catholic Church. In the background is a painting, is Solomon's Temple, which is portrayed as a temple with an octagonal base but with a domed roof. And what's curious about this is that the Bible says nothing about Solomon's Temple having a domed roof, yet somebody in the Vatican seemed to think it was okay for not only Perugino, but also Raphael, who was commissioned to paint a painting, this time of Joseph and Mary in their nuptials with Solomon's Temple in the background. But both painters, Raphael and Perugino, insisted Solomon's Temple had a domed roof on it. And what's fascinating about this is that, especially in the case of Perugino's painting, his Solomon's Temple, when it's matched up with the early depictions of the U.S. Capitol, say before 1820, are virtually ringers for one another.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the great values of having. How many illustrations do you think are in this book?
Must be a couple 300 or so.
At least.
Yeah.
At least. And almost so many in color, many of them very rare. But you photographed, you took your time, really, and photographed the Capitol like I've never seen before.
Well, thank you. I made numerous trips there, along with Dr. Gray, of course, and we spent quite a bit of time just trying to get the details, and we were fortunate to be able to take a dome tour with my congressman, Jim Cooper, and so that enabled us to get some really, really nice angles that you don't often see in print, especially of the apotheosis as well as the dome. So it was really a labor of love. I just fell in love with the Capitol, still in love with it, have such great pride for it, and want everybody to know that the United States Capitol is a place of, truly a sacred space and a place of true wonder. And it's been not discouraging, but I've recognized something that kind of surprised me, and you've probably encountered this too in your presentations about the Capitol, that there's, and you alluded to this in your opening remarks, which is that there's a real cynicism about the Capitol and a real cynicism about D.C. itself. People somehow think that it's somehow evil or twisted, or that the Masons are trying to pull one over on us, and I don't think that's the case at all, and I just encourage people to try to come back to at least neutral and start from kind of an open-minded perspective when looking at these places and to say, wait a minute, let's drop the cynicism and recognize what a truly magnificent capital we have and how really, in fact, glorious and inspiring it is to be able to visit and to go inside the capital.
Amen. Amen. Yeah, maybe you might have had something to do with it in the recreation of, the capital yourself. I mean, you really have put a great deal forward that I think is the foundation where other people can build on. And that's what that's consistent with all of your work over a period of decades.
Well, thank you.
Everything has led to something else, and because they all are interconnected. Okay, well, we need to take our first break, but when we come back, let's talk about the dome, because the dome is a cosmic symbol, and you have so many terrific illustrations of various domes and interpretations of some of the symbolism that I think our listeners should know about. We'll be back with our guest, William Henry. The book is Freedom's Gate, The Lost Symbols in the U.S. Capitol, with Dr. Mark Gray, Scala Day Publishing, available at williamhenry.net or by clicking the link on the front page of 21stCenturyRadio.com. If you're a business owner or executive seeking growth yet determined to cut wasteful costs, consider outsourcing your whole marketing department to The Selling Well. The Selling Well offers businesses truly superior marketing services without all the overhead costs associated with employing a full-time marketing executive. Learn more online at thesellingwell.com. That's thesellingwell.com, named after one of our greatest symbols of prosperity, the well. Visit thesellingwell.com or call The Selling Well's managing partner Plato Hieronymus at 443-939-1890. TheSellingWell.com. Researchers at Johns Hopkins are seeking volunteers with a diagnosis of cancer to participate in a scientific study of self-exploration brought about by psilocybin. Psilocybin is a psychoactive substance found naturally in mushrooms, which has been used for centuries as a sacrament for religious and spiritual purposes. Volunteers will be given careful preparation before receiving the psilocybin in a comfortable, supportive setting. Structured guidance both during and after the session will facilitate integration. This study complies with all FDA regulations. Please call 410-550-5990 or visit cancer-insight.org. Confidentiality will be maintained. That's 410-550-5990 or www.cancer-insight.org.
This is Bill McKibben, author and environmental activist. You're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for doing all you can to try to change the energy future of this country.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio with our guest William Henry, Freedom's Gate, The Lost Symbols in the United States Capitol, with Dr. Mark Gray, Scaliday Publishing. Available at williamhenry.net or by checking or clicking, that is, the link on the front page of 21stcenturyradio.com. Domes, boy, domes are something else. How is the dome a cosmic symbol, William?
Well, the dome itself is actually, we think, modeled after the beehive originally. Most sacred symbols are modeled after something in nature, and the dome is it comes from the beehive. It's another well-known manifestation of it is the stupa in India, in China, which is literally a construct that creates a spiral or a vortex of energy that spins around a central axis. And that actually became one of the most important insights in kind of deciphering the code, if you will, of the United States Capitol, because most people don't look at it as a beehive, but that's in fact what the dome is. And as I started to think about this, I went immediately to recognizing that the dome of the U.S. Capitol has been considered hallowed ground ever since Abraham Lincoln's assassinated body laid in state in the Capitol in 1865. And so I got to thinking, well, when we lay our presidents in state and you have tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people circumnavigating that body, laying in the center of this vortex of energy and directing prayer energy at that body, you just have to wonder, what is the spiritual impact of that? And it started to awaken this kind of idea that what we have here is this just amazing story being told inside the rotunda. When you think about the president laying in state in the middle of the rotunda, and immediately above is this vortex, and with this imagery of ascension and resurrection immediately above, it just makes a powerful statement about the transcendence of the soul and how we journey into the afterlife.
Well, you handle this work so carefully, especially in regards to domes and relating it to the human head,
mm-hmm.
so to speak, and
right.
there, you know, that's the interesting thing about symbols, is that they're multi-leveled. There are so many different ways that they are interlinked, and all of that is lost if you think that a symbol only has one meaning and one interpretation. And I especially liked how you worked in the stupa in regards to what later becomes, well, the steeples and chapel, steeples,
right.
that is, and all these traditions. It's like basically they're all basically saying almost the same thing, the same story of this energy that is created, that it can be used for healing, which I believe, just as you do, that the Capitol is one of those centers. It's one of the great centers of the world, literally. Now, could you give us some background on the great Italian painter Costantino Bromidi, 1805 to 1885, who was dubbed the Michelangelo of the Capitol?
Yeah, Costantino Bromidi has just an utterly fascinating story to me. An Italian-born painter, lived in Rome, worked in the Vatican. He was early on identified as having extreme talent as a painter and was actually hired by the Vatican to restore some of the works of the great Renaissance painter Raphael. And so he spent a good part of his life working in the Vatican, restoring the paintings of Raphael, especially in the famous Raphael corridors in the Vatican. And then his life took a change. He had a wife and children. His life took a sudden turn when in 1848 there was a revolution in Rome, very much like it happened here in America in 1776. The people decided they wanted more religious freedom. They wanted to be free to worship more than just the Judeo-Christian choices. And so there was a revolution, and the Pope temporarily lost control of Rome. And during this time, Brumidi actually sided with the revolutionaries against the Pope. And as history tells, the Pope regained control of Rome through the help of European armies. And suddenly, Brumidi finds himself on the wrong side of the law, so to speak, and is actually imprisoned by the Vatican. And he is sentenced to 18 years in prison. Well, his life takes another turn when Jesuit priests come over from New York City and request that the Pope release Brumidi into their ward, saying that they need him to come to the United States to paint in the churches and cathedrals of the New World, something that Brumidi was deeply interested in because he felt that America was the only land in the world where true freedom or true liberty existed. And so what happened is the Vatican made a deal with the Jesuits saying that that'd be fine, they'll release Brumidi, but they did something very strange, and I think something very important in the development and the consciousness of Brumidi. They insisted that Brumidi's wife and children remain in Italy under the watchful eye of the Vatican. Mm-hmm. Reading between the lines there, I mean, there is no direct historical evidence of this, but knowing how the Vatican does business and how the Jesuits do business, I think they knew that Brumidi was an exceptionally talented man that knew some extremely important secrets. Mm-hmm. And couldn't just kill him, couldn't keep him in prison. They needed to make use of him, but at the same time wanted to ensure that he wasn't going to stray too far. And so what happens is Brumidi comes to the United States in 1851 and works his way into New York society, goes to Mexico City for a time, and then on the way back from Mexico City, this is when he stops in Washington, D.C., and is hired by Captain Montgomery Meigs of the United States Corps of Engineers, who has just finished construction of the new expansion of the United States Capitol. And it's got all these blank walls, empty corridors, and Brumidi is hired to paint the corridors of the U.S. Capitol. Turns out Montgomery Meigs was a huge admirer of the works of Raphael in the Vatican. He was a huge admirer of the artwork of ancient Herculaneum in Pompeii, and Brumidi was a perfect fit. And so when he was hired to paint in the Capitol, it was intended that he would be creating a virtual duplicate of what he had done in or had seen in the halls and corridors of the Vatican. And so what we have here is a situation where not only does the exterior symbolism of the U.S. Capitol match the Vatican, but the interior of the Vatican, as is widely acknowledged by Capitol scholars, is virtually a mirror image of the Raphael corridors in the Vatican.
And that's where, once again, the photographs that you have in this book make it very obvious. You know, that's what I love about this piece of work so much, is that words are important, but when you see visually how they are alike, then there's no controversy whatsoever.
Absolutely not. And, of course, this is what was happening at the time, too, is that once the Capitol extensions were complete, now it was time to begin construction of the dome.
Well, that's what we're going to be getting into soon, but I have a few other questions before we get to the actual mural at the top of the dome, which is,
sure,
you do an extraordinary job at this, especially in relating it to alchemy, which we'll get to next hour. The meaning, before we get to that, though, there are certain elements that I'd like to check out, and that is the meaning of the rainbow. is used prevalently in both religious and secular traditions. Could you tell us about the rainbow and its meaning?
Well, the rainbow is one of is perhaps the most important symbol, I think, in the U.S. Capitol Dome. It is the key feature of the apotheosis of George Washington. He's sitting on the rainbow. And the rainbow, like the word apotheosis, which means to raise to a godlike stature or glorification, is a symbol of resurrection and ascension. It's also a symbol of hope. After the flood, God gives the sign of the rainbow, saying that he will never again destroy the world by flood. And it is an extraordinary symbol, and it's even more extraordinary when you see, for example, images of Jesus on the rainbow in resurrection paintings. Over and over again in Christian imagery, when Jesus is portrayed in his resurrected or ascended form, he is shown either on a rainbow or surrounded by a glory or aureole of rainbow energy. And what I did in the book is to look at that and say, well, this is exactly how the Tibetans portray their lamas who have achieved what they call the great perfection or the rainbow body. It's believed in Tibet that we have within us the chakra system that is symbolized by the colors of the rainbow. We have seven chakras that dot our spinal cord system. We count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all good children go to heaven. The idea is that if we can awaken these chakras, the red, orange, yellow, green, blue chakras within us, and violet chakras within us, that we can achieve the rainbow body in this sort of what is variously described as enlightenment consciousness or Christ consciousness, or in fact the creation of our ascension vehicle.
Well, I think that's a very important part of your book because of its showing how universal, how this is really part of a perennial philosophy, a foundation of all basic religions, all the great religions especially discuss this. And again, by the scores of illustrations you have of the rainbow, you make that point so well. Not just two or three, but dozens, just dozens of them. Now, getting back, we're going to get to that mural inside the dome soon, but let's backtrack here on the meaning of apotheosis and how it applies to George Washington.
Well, the word apotheosis is Greek, and it means to deify, to elevate, to raise from a man to a God-man. So what it means is that when we see Washington on the rainbow, and as I do in the book, he is to be equated symbolically with Jesus on the rainbow and all the other ascended beings, such as the Tibetans who have achieved the rainbow body or great perfection, who are also portrayed on the rainbow. It's a process of angelization, if you will, a process of ascension, and the belief is that everyone has the capability within them to achieve this ascended status. And I need to make a point that I cannot say, I don't have like the proverbial smoking gun document that says that George Washington was an enlightened being. But what I do document, what Dr. Gray and I do document in the book, is that the people at the time of Washington's death and in the immediate decades afterward believed that he was apotheosized, that he had achieved this ascended status. Over and over again, I present several examples in the book of Washington as an ascended being because this was the belief at the time. Mm-hmm. And now, again, it sounds strange to us, and people email me saying, wow, you must be insane if you think Washington ascended or was an ascended being. And my response is, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the people in Washington's era believed that. And somehow we have lost touch with that belief system.
Yeah, it's like one of those lost symbols. Now, deism. You have, you do this so well. Deism is really key to the Founding Fathers' beliefs. But I would wager that most Americans have no idea what deism really was all about. Since many of our Founding Fathers were deists, what are the beliefs of deism, and where did it originate?
Well, the idea of the deist, it really originates in the era known as the Enlightenment. This was a period where science was coming into the forefront of people's minds, and they were fairly skeptical thinkers that had denounced some of the, call it the superstitions or the beliefs of the church and the abuses of the state. And they were looking for a time and looking for a belief system that would enable people to essentially achieve awakened consciousness or enlightenment. They derived much of their knowledge and their understanding from the ancient world. The Enlightenment was spawned by the Renaissance, which had begun in the middle of the 15th century when suddenly the classical Greek works became available in Europe. These Renaissance thinkers such as Descartes, Francis Bacon, John Dee, Sir Isaac Newton were inspired by the ancients such as Plato and even by the study of Solomon's Temple. And they believed in God as a great architect, as a creator being, without necessarily thinking that they had to believe in Jesus Christ or they had to believe in the beliefs of the Judaic religion. They were looking for more of a scientific basis for this, and a central tenet, especially of the Enlightenment, was that nature was perfect, and that perfect men could live in harmony with nature's law. And they believe that humanity's best days, when we live closer to nature, are not behind us. They're ahead of us.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Well put. As you know, one tenet of deism is the belief, and this is really key, friends. Listen, please. Is the belief that man can achieve apotheosis and become self-actualized as a god by following a path of mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual development. It was a science.
That's right.
It's a spiritual science. And basically, this is what secret societies are all about. The spiritual science of connecting yourself once again with the divine. And it can be done, and it can be done by everyone if we try. And I think that was an extraordinary concept from that standpoint. Well, we need to take a break here on 21st Century Radio. And it's, yes, it's quiz time for one of you folks out there to win a copy of what we're talking about. Our guest is William Henry, Freedom's Gate, The Lost Symbols in the U.S. Capitol, with Dr. Mark Gray. And it's published by Scala Day Publishing, available at williamhenry.net or by clicking the link on the front page of 21stcenturyradio.com.
Radio 680 WCBM.
Next week on 21st Century Radio, Maryland curiosities, quirky characters, roadside oddities, and other offbeat stuff. Plus, the Beatles' Yellow Submarine, from an original artist to the upcoming remake by Walt Disney. Sunday night at 8, 21st Century Radio, Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
No matter who we are or what we do, our health is a priority. To stay well or to recover from an illness or injury, consider using options that are safe, natural, and in some cases, thousands of years old. From acupuncture to modern-day massage, counseling, and homeopathic medicine, the Ruscomb Mansions Community Health Center offers children and adults numerous health care and support services. Find out more about the Ruscomb Mansions yoga classes and weekend programs. Call 410-367-7300. That's 367-7300.
Yes, indeed. We got 5 inches of it out here. Well, how would you like to win a free 21st Century Radio library of books and magazines, periodicals, and a punch in the nose? Well, you can do that. It includes a CD-ROM of the book Freedom's Gate, The Lost Symbols in the United States Capitol by William Henry and Dr. Mark Gray, courtesy of William Henry and Mark Gray. If you can answer this question, you might be able to take home that entire library. Here it is. Who was our guest on 21st Century Radio last week? You just tell us the name of our first hour guest on 21st Century Radio last week. And if you can, and you're the first, you're our winner, but you have to qualify. Here's how to do it. If you know the answer to this hour's quiz question on 21st Century Radio and you have not won from us in the last 60 days, call in now. 410-922-6680. That's 410-WCBM-680. First with the right answer wins. Prizes are available for you to pick up at the WCBM studios in Pikesville after Friday of this week. Winners have 60 days to pick up the prizes and must wait 60 days before winning another prize from 21st Century Radio. Good luck.
This is Dr. Alan Hamilton, the author of The Scalpel and Soul, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus, one of the great programs in my mind that is offering innovation in this century.
Welcome back. Our guest is William Henry, Freedom's Gate, The Lost Symbols in the United States Capitol with Dr. Mark Gray. Scala Day Publishing, available at williamhenry.net or by clicking the link on the front page of 21st Century Radio. Now, I think we're prepared enough to start talking about that mural. And see, in Baltimore, William, they call murals Muriels. So if I say Muriel, you understand that, okay?
Okay.
That's our translation of it. It's always been that way, and it isn't going to change. So would you please, this mural's extraordinary. Please describe the mural inside of the dome.
The mural inside the dome, well, I mean, it's, first of all, it's 180 feet off the ground in the rotunda. And so to see it properly, you either have to kind of creak your neck back or you have to lay on your back, which is kind of my preferred method. And kind of freaks the guards out a little bit in the Capitol when I lay in my back and study the apotheosis, but then I pull out my camera and they recognize I'm just really trying to take a picture. But what it portrays is this painting. It's a fairly complicated painting with George Washington in the center, again, sitting on the rainbow. He is flanked by Liberty and by another goddess, Freedom, and he is surrounded by 13 maidens with stars on their heads. And additionally surrounding him are five pagan gods. You have Minerva, the goddess of wisdom, the goddess of war. You have Hermes or Mercury, the god of transformation, the god of communication and commerce. You have Hephaestus, who's the god of smithcraft and alchemy. Then you also have Poseidon, the god of the oceans, the god of the waters. And what's curious about this is that those gods that I just mentioned are all five of the pagan gods that the Vatican, the very same Vatican that essentially kicked Brumidi out of Italy, had sought to suppress for around 1,600 years. And so here in this extraordinary painting, you've got Constantino Brumidi resurrecting these god beings, and in addition to that, he is doing something that to some people's minds has got to be quite heretical or even blasphemous. He's portraying George Washington as a Christ-like being.
Could you tell us how he has created George in the likeness of a Christ-like being?
The comparison is, and I make this in the book, is that when you look at the images of the resurrected Jesus, he's portrayed sitting on a rainbow. And this is exactly the way Brumidi chose to portray George Washington. Now, that it would be one thing if he just showed Washington by a rainbow, as did Gilbert Stuart in the famous painting that was rescued by Dolly Madison from the British in the White House when they came to burn the White House. But in this case, he literally has him on a rainbow. But the key thing is that the title of the painting is The Apotheosis, or Resurrection or Ascension of George Washington. So the message cannot be any more direct in the painting and then in the symbolism that Brumidi is asking us to consider, that Washington has ascended into the heavens as a heavenly being and is effectively equated with Christ.
Now, surrounding Washington are 13 beings. Could you describe them a little bit more?
We have 13 maidens that surround George Washington. They all have stars on their heads. And when you take the tour in the Capitol, the guides will tell you that those 13 maidens represent the 13 original colonies. And when I first heard that, I had a little bit of a problem with that. That just didn't make any sense to me. And the reason why was because this is not an earthly scene. This is a heavenly scene. George Washington is not portrayed on the earth. He's portrayed in the heavens. And so it raised the question in my mind, well, then how can they those 13 maidens with stars on their heads represent the 13 colonies? They must represent something else.
Well, I think that maybe right now we should note your wonderful interpretations of the number 13, because many fundamentalists seem to think that number is satanic, which it's not.
Right.
But could you tell us about the importance of the number 13? Of course, we know there were 13 states, but there are some very important meanings to the number 13.
Yeah, there's also 13 stripes, 13 stars on our original flag. And one immediate place that you go when you're trying to decipher the meaning of the 13 is that this is a heavenly scene. So is it possible then that this circle of star beings represents actual stars or constellations? As you know, there's 23 zodiacs on public government buildings in Washington, D.C. And so it would make sense that, well, there's another zodiac in D.C., and it's in the rotunda of the United States Capitol, in fact, in the apotheosis, which is a very good possibility. And so if we're looking at the apotheosis as a possible zodiac, then we have to be open to the possibility that the 13 star maidens actually represent not just the 12 constellations that are commonly known, but actually Rumidi is referencing the 13th, which is Ophiuchus, the serpent holder. And that's a very good possibility, because when you look around the Capitol, one of the most profound images that you see duplicated, we've counted over a dozen times in the Capitol, is the image of the serpent, especially the caduceus. It was one of the primary symbols of the goddess America. There are numerous rooms in the Capitol, even those painted by Brumidi himself, in which America is portrayed as a goddess cradling a caduceus wand, mm-hmm. just like Mary might be cradling the Christ child. So there's a definite message that we see there. But in the lifting of the serpent, of course, is what Ophiuchus, the 13th zodiac sign, is all about. Ophiuchus has numerous references in occult literature to the idea that he conveys or represents the idea of transcendence. When Ophiuchus lifts the serpent, that's like Moses lifting the serpent of healing in the wilderness. And so the idea of lifting the serpent is akin to lifting or raising our kundalini, our life force energy. And literally, that's what we're possibly talking about here is the ultimate message in the apotheosis. But I found another reference, and this came out of the research I was doing into the Tibetan concept of the rainbow body. When the Tibetans tell us that we have within us, latent within our DNA, the capability of transforming ourselves into beings of light by accelerating the frequency of our body until it literally transforms into five-colored rainbow light, they also assure us that this teaching did not originate on Earth. They tell us that this rainbow body or great perfection teaching, and mind you, perfection was a very important word to the founding fathers. They believed in the perfectibility of the human spirit and the human soul. The Tibetans tell us that the great perfection teaching is taught in 13 star systems in addition to our own.
That was so great to see you put that in there. You know, there's information here that so many other books never touch on, and that's why I think this book is extremely important, to, especially today. It's really needed today. And we're running out of time this hour. So we've covered that inner circle of the 13 beings surrounding George Washington and others there. But we need to talk a little bit about the outer circle when we return, and what's above the top of the dome and how that is linked to what we find in these two various circles. Now, friends, there's no way in the world we can cover this text as much as I'd like to. We need many hours to do so, and I'd probably wear out my friendship with William if we did that. You'd be laying on the floor. But it's extremely important, and that's the reason why I'm pushing this book very hard, mainly because when you see the illustrations, and it will show you time and time again this entire dome, it will give you various different years of the dome being photographed and what it looked like and through its restoration and what it used. That's what's so remarkable about this. Every book that I've seen so far, including my own, has a very small photograph of this important symbol. But this gives you many. We'll be back with our guest, William Henry, Freedom's Gate, The Lost Symbols in the U.S. Capitol with Dr. Mark Gray, Scala Day. Publishing available at williamhenry.net or by clicking the link on the front page of 21stCenturyRadio.com.
Now, the latest from Fox News
on the most powerful names in talk.